Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight, the comic book page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode are from the July 2009 previews. Most of these should start hitting shops beginning in September. And, you know, hopefully a lot of them will come out in September. But, you know, there's usually a few stragglers, whatever. As always, we're going through previews cover to cover, but certainly not page by page, because even with the reduced page count, it's still over 400 pages, plus another 100 for the Marvel previews, which will be tackling around page, I guess, 170, where it would kind of fit if it were in the actual previews. We have an open submission policy on these episodes. We've got a ton of great submissions this month. I think we've got nearly an hour's worth of content on there. But if when the August previews comes out, you think, wow, this is a great comic, people ought to know about it, please record a short MP3, send it to us, and we'll include it next month.
And by the way, all these, I won't say all, but most of the solicits are available online, even for people. We call it a preview spotlight, but really it's related to just the new solicits. And starting about 2 weeks before previews, which comes out on the last Wednesday of the month, the solicits start going up on the web. You don't have to worry about it if you cannot find all the solicits. I usually will ferret them all out and put links to it in a single thread out on our forums at forums.comicbookpage.com. There's usually going to be a sticky thread up near the top for the current month's previews links once those start hitting the internet. And then you can check them out there too. Even if you don't want to do a submission, if you just want to see the solicits for what's coming out, you can always check out those links on our forum.
Yeah, I find those a big help when you put them up there, Bob, because particularly for some of these smaller publishers, I mean, it's hard to go track down where they've got them listed. And funny enough, a lot of these publishers don't put them up on their own website in a timely fashion.
Well, the other part is like they go up on like these news sites like Newsarama and stuff, and once they fall off the main news page, like their Today's News, it's really difficult to find them on those sites. So I'm glad even for myself, if I want to go back to them, that I have the link that I catch when they first put it up.
Yeah. Well, shall we get started with Dark Horse?
Sure. And our first selection this month is on page 22, which is the very first page of the Dark Horse solicits. And this is something that we picked for a special discount. It's 50% off with DCBS. It's called Beasts of Burden. It's number 1 of 4, and it's by Evan Dorkin writing and Jill Thompson doing the art. And this is basically a set of dogs and cats that are going on a supernatural mystery adventure. A little bit of humor thrown in. It's a little different art style for Jill. She does a nice painted style on it, and this is just a charming series. She's Evan and Jill have done these stories before in the various Dark Horse anthologies. They had a book called Dark Horse Book of Hauntings, Dark Horse Book of Witchcraft, etc. There were four of those that came out, and each one of those had a short, I think about 8-page story with these characters, and I enjoyed those stories in each one of those anthologies, and now we're getting an entire mini-series with these characters. And this is something that I would say is, if you've got kids, or, you know, even if you just like, you know, the painted art style, look at page 22 of previews, take a look at this image. If you want to see a book that's like this, you can go ahead and get this. And again, I think that, you know, if you've got a little kid, you could easily read this story to them. It's very kid-friendly. So that's that. And with that, we're going to get our first clip from our good friend Damien.
Hey guys, it's Damien here from the Cryptographic Podcast with my first pick for the month, which is going to be on page 26, which is The Cleaner's Absent Bodies. It's a 120-page trade paperback for $14.95. Now, if you saw The Cleaner's earlier on, you know, they actually had the four issues that came out then. It was literally about a trauma scene. Cleaners, basically they do all the cleanup after violent crimes and things like that. But, you know, as after doing it for many, many years, sort of these guys start to investigate on their own type thing, where they sort of pick up bits and pieces that maybe the police have missed off. And also there's a bit of a supernatural sort of thing leading through it. And this investigation leads them towards uncovering a disturbing mystery involving missing people, mostly children, which dates back longer than the history of the city itself. So it really does seem to be an interesting thing. I actually didn't pick up the issues when they originally came out. I wanted to, but I just couldn't afford it. But for $14.95, getting it, I reckon this is going to be worth it. So check it out. Okay, back to the guys.
Then on page 28, got a pick we made for DCBS with a 50% discount. And that is Usagi Yojimbo Yokai. And it is the first original graphic novel, full color, for Usagi Yojimbo. Now, Usagi's only been going for 25 years, so eventually they had to get around to this. It is 64 pages. It's a hardcover, 6-inch by 9-inch format. And yokai are the monsters, demons, and spirits of Japanese folklore. So it's going to have, obviously, a bit of a supernatural bent to it. And, you know, I heard Stan Sakai speak when he was here in Austin for Staple a couple of months back. And, you know, he's got a great love for the Japanese culture and does a really good job kind of researching their history, their folklore, that kind of a stuff. And, you know, I'm trying to get into Usagi because I haven't read it for the last 25 years, but for most of that time, I've been hearing great things about it. So when Fantagraphics had that collection of the early stuff a month or two back, it's like, okay, I'm out of excuses. I'll go get that. They had a good jumping on point of Usagi. So I'm going to check out this original hardcover, and it looks pretty good. Again, we got a 50% discount. It's got a cover price of $14.95, but through DCBS, it's only going to cost $7.47, which is a pretty good deal. And then next up, we've got a clip from Ian Gowan. Let's listen to that.
Hi, this is Ian Gowan, and this month I am excited about Conan the Sumerian, number 14 from Dark Horse. It's on page 34 of your July previews catalog. It's exciting because the first 7 pages of art are by comic book master artist writer Joe Kubert. And it's his first work ever on Conan. The following 15 pages of art are by Timothy Truman. Truman is also an amazing artist and the regular writer on this title. I believe the script is by Timothy Truman with story by both him and his son Ben Truman. The regular artist up until this solicitation has been Tomas Giorello, who's also been great. Joe Kubert is the artist, writer, most well known for his work on Sergeant Rock, Tarzan, and Hawkman, all for DC. His most recent work was Tor, which was re-released last year. I believe it came out originally in 1952 or so. And I can't help but notice the similarity in look between Kubert's Tor and Buscema's Conan. And Conan came after Tor with the block hair and the large body whatnot. Kubert's 82 years old now and still doing amazing sequential art. He's also been working on Sergeant Rock comic strip for DC's new Wednesday comics, which I just saw and looks great. This issue of Conan is a true collector's comic book, and I think you should check it out. The cost is $2.99, but of course with the DCBS discount, it's $1.79, and it goes on sale September 23rd.
Yeah, and Joe Kubert did do one of the variant covers for issue one of this run of Conan, but this will be his first interior work on Conan. And I actually hadn't noticed that he was doing that story because I just buy Conan every month. It's just a kind of automatic buy for me, but that is pretty cool. So thank you, Ian.
Okay, next up we've got another clip from Damien.
Hey guys, it's Damien back again with my next pick for the month, which is still actually in Dark Horse on page 40, which is Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Slaves of the Republic. Now, this is another trade, which is 144 pages for $9.95. Honestly, I've been a fan of Star Wars since I was 3 years old and originally saw the first movie, and I've actually had my son sort of get in with it as well. So since he's, you know, started off when he was three, I actually did the same thing and introduced him into the movies, and from there we've sort of gone through, and with actually the Clone Wars cartoon that's actually been going on, he's been loving that one, and from that he just wants to watch that and he wants to read any Star Wars, so I've like introduced him to a lot of the animated style Star Wars that actually came out a while ago from Dark Horse, but this is something that I think that he will really enjoy. So it's great for young readers. It was Anakin Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and you know, it's them discovering a plot by Count Dooku. As you can see from the actual cover of the picture of the cover there, you actually have Ahsoka there as well. So it is tying into that animated type of thing that we're waiting for the second season to come out now. But, you know, if you're a fan of it, or if you know people that are fans of it, or if you want to get someone into it, this is a really good way to start. And the price is pretty good. You know, 144 pages for $9.95 is pretty good. So definitely check it out. Okay, let's go back to Bob and John.
I think if this is a collection of some of the comics they've done recently, I may have read the first one of those. No, actually, I read... Yeah, it is, because it's the collection of the monthly one they've got right above it in previews. And it was good stuff, so certainly if you're enjoying the Clone Wars cartoon, I agree with Damien, definitely worth checking out. Now that wraps up... the picks we have for Dark Horse this month. There's plenty of other good stuff to be found there, though. And starting us off in DC is a pick from Mike Myers.
Hello, this is Mike Myers from the Geek Brunch and DC Noise podcast. And I'm going to do my previews picks for the comic book page. My first choice is on page 69. It's Superman's Secret Origin number 1. Written by Jeff Johns, with art by Gary Frank and John Seibel, with the covers by Gary Frank. It's going to be 48 pages. It's a 6-issue miniseries, and the cover price is $3.99. I'm really looking forward to this because I really love what Jeff Johns does with origin stories. He pays respect to what's happened in the past and adds a little niche or something new to the origin. And he did that with Green Lantern, and I really, really loved what he did with Green Lantern, and I'm really looking forward to this team, artist and writer, teaming up again to do this great story. And he says he's going to be focusing on new beginnings of Lex Luthor, Legion of Superheroes, Lois Lane, Metallo, Jimmy Olsen, and Parasite. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he's going to do. That's my first choice, and you can find it again on page 69. And now back to Bob and John.
Thank you, Mike. And next up, staying in the Superman areas, on the very next page, on page 70, we've got Action Comics number 881 with the Hunt for Reactron starting here. And it's got Supergirl and Flamebird finding themselves at each other's throats, and it's going to be continued next in Supergirl 45. And this series, the Superman stuff at DC, has been so good lately. It's been better, in my mind, than Superman has been probably since I can remember at DC. It's been a long time since I've been so excited about Superman. And what Rucka and Jeff Johns and James Robinson are all doing on these books is tremendous. Sterling Gates also is writing the Supergirl stuff right now. And something that you can check out if you don't already listen to it is the Word Balloon podcast by John Suntress. And I was just listening the other day to the episode where he interviewed Greg Rucka. And that was a fabulous interview. And he talked to Rucka about the Superman stuff. He also talked about the Detective Comics relaunch of Batwoman. And Rucka talked a lot about his DC work and has me really, really excited for what's coming up in these stories. So if you haven't been checking out the Superman stuff at DC, this is as good a jumping on point as any with Action 881, because it is the start of a new storyline there that's going to weave through some of the titles. So, you know, give that one a look. It's 50% off issue number 881.
And yeah, I've got to agree that the whole Superman family of titles has just been doing some really great stuff these days. I've been really enjoying the kind of retooling and stuff of the Supergirl comic series. They've kind of gotten her away from the trampy, bratty version and made her more of a, you know, interesting character that's fun to read. And our next pick is on page 72, and it's the Supergirl Annual number 1. We also have that at a 50% discount. And what has me interested with this annual is really two things. About a year ago, Supergirl took on the secret identity of Linda Lang, the niece of Lana Lang. And they've played with that a little in the Supergirl stuff, but this annual is going to be kind of her first day kind of trying out that secret identity thing and kind of, you know, how that works for her, what she does right, what she does wrong, that sort of a thing. That, to me, just seems like fun. But then, in addition to that, they're going to do the secret origin of Superwoman, which they have already revealed. Do we want to tell them who it was, or...?
It's been out, so...
Okay, so it's Lucy Lane. It's Lois's younger sister. This is going to tell us how she went from just being Lois's younger sister to being able to essentially mimic Kryptonian powers, which, you know, to me that was a major part of that Who is Superwoman storyline, and I think they're definitely building up to something, and that Superwoman's gonna somehow come back again and be a relevant story point. And, you know, again, I think they've been doing great stuff over with Supergirl. Sterling Gates is just doing some really solid writing. Jamal Igel, who does the monthly book, he's not doing the annual, unfortunately, but he's just doing a bang-up job on the monthly.
And I will say that anyone who has a daughter or a niece, any young girl, Supergirl is back to the point where it's something that I think you can actually hand a young girl as something that can be almost a heroic model, and it's not just... You know, like you said, it's not just some trampy character that seems to exist so, you know, pervy guys can, like, you know, look at her in comics. She's being handled in a very good fashion now. And I think it's a very appropriate book now for young girls, which wasn't the case for a long time.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a pick out of the Red Circle area. Let's listen to that.
Hey everybody, this is Randy Z with my first pick for the month. It's in the DC section on page 74, The Shield, number 1. I've been looking for things to get me back into the DC universe after a extended absence from that universe, and this looks like one of the things that is going to get me there. Seems like a pretty interesting character. I don't know if he's been anywhere before. He does resemble the Golden Age Shield that was published by a different publisher in the 40s. Not sure if it's the same person or not, but I'm going to give it a try and see if that'll do it for me. So, check out The Shield, number 1. And back to you, Bob and John.
Now, this is that same Shield in so much as it's the same intellectual property, but this is a new take on it, DC's taken the old characters, which I believe were from Archie, correct?
Yeah. The Red Circle books were originally published by Archie.
And people might be familiar with them from the Impact line that DC did about 15, 20 years ago. But even that was kind of a reimagining of the characters. This is yet another reimagining of it. But I'm looking forward to some of these, particularly the Shield. I think that one should be cool. The Web, I'm curious about, but, you know, I mean, just visually, I think they've already made a mistake or two. The W logo he's got on his chest looks more like an H. So, I mean, there's that kind of inherent confusion, but it'll be very interesting to see how DC's pulling these characters in, how they're retooling them for the current times, and what they can do with them. So, definitely looking forward to that. And next up, we've got another clip from Mike Myers.
Mike Myers here again for my next pick, which is from DC, Brave and the Bold, issue number 27. Written by Michael Straczynski with cover by Jesus Seiss. This one I'm really looking forward to because I've always been fascinated by the Hero Dial. I have the original series from House of Mystery, which featured Robbie Reed, and also the one from the 1981, which had Chris King and Vicky Grant in Adventure Comics. And my favorite of all was the Hero written by Will Pfeiffer, series in 2003. So I'm really looking forward to this, and I usually like Straczynski's writing, so I think he's going to do a good job. And the premise sounds pretty cool because Robbie Reed's in Gotham, and somebody gets a hold of the dial, and the Joker's cutting loose or has a crime wave going on in the city. So I'm really looking forward to this. The price is $2.99. This is Straczynski's taking over the Brave and the Bold title, and I think he's going to do a really good job, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the Hero Dial again. Yeah, I know that Bob and John got a discount code from DCBS, so she should get like 50% off on this title, and it's a good jumping on point at this point with the new writer. So give it a try if you haven't in the past, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Thanks. And back to Bob and John.
And, yeah, we do have a 50% discount through DCBS on this. I'm looking forward to it because I, too, am a big fan of the Hero Dial. I really enjoyed the Chris King, Vicky Grant storylines they were doing in Adventure Comics near the end of that run. So, should be fun. I'm assuming this takes place in the past because it mentions Robbie Reed going to Gotham with his grandfather. But, you know, who knows, maybe it's current day stuff. Either way, it should be good. Now, on the next page, we've got another pick that we've got a 50% discount for from DCBS. That is Booster Gold number 24. This is being written by Dan Jurgens, and the co-feature, which is Blue Beetle, is written by Matt Sturgis. And the art on the backup feature is Mike Norton. The art on the main feature is Dan Jurgens and Norm Ratman. And I've really been enjoying what they've been doing with Booster Gold. I think this is probably the best stuff for Booster Gold ever. I mean, including his original series, the stuff in 52, which I thought was really good. And in this one, he's facing off against the Black Beetle, which we're finally going to learn his identity and kind of what he's going up, you know, what his motivation and stuff is. But the Black Beetle's kind of going through time and changing things to make them, I guess from our perspective, not so good. In this case, the fate for the entire Justice League's hanging in the balance. And, you know, Booster's gotta go save the day, and of course he's not gonna get credit for any of it. So it's a good spin on how he used to be the, you know, public glory, you know, hound or whatever, and now he's just doing the heroic stuff for the right reasons. The backup feature with Blue Beetle also puts him up against Black Beetle, and, you know, I've enjoyed the first installment of that backup feature, and, you know, I enjoyed the Blue Beetle series. I'm glad they're keeping that character in play. So, it is $3.99, but you are getting about 30 pages of story, roughly 20 to 22 for the main story, and 8 to 10 for the backup story. So, you're getting, you know, a fair amount of content for the money. Then, next up, we've got, I guess, two picks from Randy. Do we want to just play them back to back, or might we want
to just roll with them?
Let's roll with them. Here they go.
Hey, everybody. This is Randy Z again with my next pick. Also in the DC section on page 79, Justice Society of America, number 31. I happen to start picking up this book just recently, and unfortunately the first issue I picked up was a bad one for somebody trying to get into it. Happened to walk into a birthday party for Stargirl, and it definitely wasn't an issue to try to start the series off with, so I ended up picking up the four issues previous to that one and read that arc, and did like it and understand where that issue was coming from now, and I've been picking it up since. So with my affinity for Golden Age characters, I figured this would be a great one for me to get into. So if you're not reading Justice Society of America, I do recommend that you pick it up. This looks like this is going to be a good arc also, and I guess I'll turn it back over to Bob and John.
And we'll turn it right back over to Randy.
Randy Z back again with no podcast to pitch or website to go to. Back also in the DC section once again on page 82, Red Tornado number 1. When I started reading the Justice League of America back in the late 60s, I remember the Red Tornado and thought it was an interesting character. And since I've been not reading for a while and just getting back into it, this looks like a great place for me to catch back up with the Red Tornado. The caption underneath the picture is "The True Origin of the Red Tornado." And think you know everything there is to know about the mighty Red Tornado? Well, think again. It says the series will shine a new light on the true origin of the Red Tornado, so this could be very interesting to find out what they believe is the true origin of the character. So I'm definitely picking this one up to see where they're going to go with that. So that's my recommendation, Red Tornado number 1. Back to you, Bob and John.
I will say that I think that someone who has not been in comics for a while and is coming back in, this probably would be a good series. I've seen the last 5 real origins of the Red Tornado, and I'm personally getting a little tired of it. But that's just the jaded part of me coming in. I think someone who hasn't gone through all those would probably be very interested in this.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of the Red Tornado since his real origin was told back in Justice League, somewhere around issue maybe 180 or so, give or take a year, when we first got the Tornado Tyrant and Tornado Champion and all that stuff. I thought that was fun. But yeah, I agree. It's like when they retell the origins, if they do it like Geoff Johns tends to, like Mike Myers was saying, respectfully and without kind of wiping out what had happened before and embellishing the origin, that's cool, that's great. And hopefully they'll do that here. But I agree, this is a good jumping on point for a new reader or a returning reader. And I also think the Justice Society that Randy had mentioned in his first clip, definitely a great series. I'm really looking forward to getting that first issue with Willingham and Sturgis and seeing where they go with the property. Because it's just a solid series, a great team of characters. So, and we've got 3 trade paperback selections from Trevor Chapman. So let's go listen to all 3 of those.
Hello, this is Trevor Chapman from Brampton, Ontario, Canada. I am known as Ratneff on the forums, and I am a sometimes co-host on the Monarch Comic Briefings podcast. As my first pick for the preview spotlight special, in the July 2009 previews on page 88, you will find the Black Hawk trade paperback. It collects the 3-issue prestige format series from 1988, written and drawn by Howard Chaykin. Blackhawk is a Golden Age comic which revolves around the Blackhawk Squadron, and the Blackhawk Squadron is a bunch of ace fighter pilots of varying nationalities, French, Polish, I think Russian, a couple other Chinese. And they, during their original forays, were helping out the Allies in very special circumstances, being sort of an independent fighter squadron. Howard Chaykin in 1988 decided to make a three-issue prestige format. It's kind of the third in the prestige format groups. The first one was Batman The Dark Knight Returns. The second one is Green Arrow, The Longbow Hunters, and then there was Black Hawk. The similarities between the three, other than the format, is that they all tried to reinterpret the characters with a darker, grimmier, edgier storyline that was the rage in that era. Howard Chaykin, this is pretty much during the height of his career, from what I understand, and he took the Black Hawk character and put him in a 1950s post-World War II era setting, and Black Hawk is the leader of the Black Hawk Squadron, I should say. Gave him a story to tell revolving trying to prevent some Nazis from bombing New York City. The major caveat with this is that Howard Chaykin likes to infuse, or certainly at this time, a large amount of sexuality into his comics. So this comic is definitely not for anyone but an adult audience. But for lovers of Howard Chaykin, for anybody interested in the Black Hawk and possibly a reworking of his character, this is definitely, you know, worth investigating and buying. I'll be back with more. Hello, it's Trevor Chapman again, and my second pick for the July 2009 previews is also on page 88. It is The Question, Volume 5, Riddles Trade Paperback, collecting issues 25 to 30 of the 80s-era Question series by Dennis O'Neill and Denise Cowan, Bill Ray, and Malcolm Jones III. For anyone who's a big fan of the type of question that was in the Justice League Unlimited animation series, or the question that you would have found in the 52 comic book. This was the characterization of that character that led to those kind of conspiracy nuts, putting all the connections together, having some ability to fight, and being sort of a Zen guy. This was the era, the Denise Cowan and Denise O'Neill era, was when that was set in stone, for lack of a better phrase. And this is a fifth trade paperback, and if you're a fan at all of The Question, I definitely suggest you you get that. Hello, it's Trevor Chapman, and for my third pick for the July 2009 previews, on page 90 you'll find Showcase Presents the House of Secrets Volume 2 trade paperback. 496 pages, black and white, at $17.99 U.S. cover price, which I'm certain DCBS will give you a very reasonable discount on. It is written by Various and art by Various, as it is an anthologized collection of issues 99 to 119 of The House of Secrets, which was a wonderful horror comic from the 60s and 70s brought out by DC. Each comic is a collection of three or four stories that are all horror-based, with a twist ending, so there, you're always trying to second-guess what the ending is going to be. They're a nice look at that era in time, and a look at horror with a whole bunch of artists from that era that are really, really nice. And don't let the fact that it's black and white fool you, because that just means you get to see the original line art in its truest representation without being disturbed by the four-color art that would have existed at that time. I definitely think it's a value worth your money, and one that's well worth picking up.
And really, all of those are great trade paperbacks. I'm pretty sure I got the Black Hawk thing, the miniseries, when it originally came out. I know I got the Question series, and I agree that was some great stuff. And if you're liking what happened to the Question in 52 or the new Question, and want to learn more about the Vic Sage version, definitely go pick up the series of trade paperbacks. And the House of Secrets stuff is really not stuff I tend to read, but I'm glad they're kicking out the showcases on this and getting that available to a whole new audience. I just think that's a good idea.
Well, I think that those old mystery type of comics are good in black and white. I certainly like those a lot more than I like the superhero stuff, which the superhero stuff, without the color, I just feel you're missing something in those. And it is a a really low-priced way to get a hold of, you know, one of the, like, Green Lantern or something, you know, a big bunch of Green Lantern comics that you couldn't otherwise get a hold of and read, but you lose a big element of it when you have, you know, Green Lantern or the Flash without the color.
Yeah, more so with Green Lantern, but I agree in general. I mean, it's just not the same without the color for almost any of them. But particularly when it plays a point in the story, it's like, but that's yellow. It's like, how can I tell?
Because the villains in old Green Lantern stories went around with cans of yellow paint.
You know, you think if you lived in Green Lantern City, you'd certainly do that, so. All right, jumping into Vertigo. We got a pick from Bill. Let's listen to that.
Hi, everyone. This is Bill, DBM on the forum, with my first pick this month. It is on page 107 of previews, and it is Sweet Tooth, the new ongoing Vertigo series by creator Jeff Lemire. Jeff is probably most well known for his trilogy that was released by Top Shelf, which was the Essex County trilogy. He's less known probably for self-published work he released called Lost Dogs, which was excellent. This will be Jeff's second Vertigo release. A couple months back, his original graphic novel, The Nobody, was solicited, and I believe it gets released this month. But this will be his first ongoing series. Everything prior to this has been published as graphic novels, I believe. So this is his first foray into the monthly series realm. Sweet Tooth is a full-color monthly series about a boy named Gus who is, I believe, what they call a hybrid, meaning he has animal parts. In his case, I believe he has antlers and some fur. So he appears to be a cross between a human and a deer of some sort. This takes place in a post-apocalyptic world where these hybrids live. Gus has only lived in one place, which is at home with his father. I believe his father is the only person he's ever known. The story is him on an adventure to find the Preserve, which is a fabled safe haven for hybrid children. Along the way, Gus not only learns he loves chocolate, but he begins to unravel the mystery surrounding the origin of the disease that ravaged the American landscape just a decade before. And that was from the Vertigo site. So what you have here is a writer/artist with a great track record and a history of stories with heavy emotional impact. I think all of his books thus far have really got to the heart of the reader. So that combined with a post-apocalyptic story of hybrid children who are trying to figure out what happened to the world. That's just, in my opinion, you know, it doesn't get much better than that. A great artist, emotional impact, a post-apocalyptic world, and hybrid children on an adventure. I mean, that's just, you know, it doesn't get much better than that for me. Plus, well, I guess it does get a little bit better because the first issue is only $1. So, which is something Vertigo has done, you know, giving you the first sample for cheap. I can't imagine anyone who likes comics not wanting to spend $1 to pick this up. And DCBS has it for 25 cents this month. So if you're a DCBS customer, then there's absolutely no reason not to get at least one copy. I would probably recommend you getting two copies, one to give away to a friend and one to keep for yourself. That's what I'll be doing. So again, it's Sweet Tooth by Jeff Lemire. I would be getting this even without the premise, just a monthly ongoing by Jeff Lemire is an instant buy for me. This is, without a doubt, the book I'm most looking forward to this month from previews, and I can't wait to read it. Thanks.
And I do agree that the Vertigo policy lately to have these first issues for a buck is a really good way of encouraging people to try out that new series. And, you know, whether you like it or not, I mean, I've liked some. We talked just on the last one, you know, they had Greek Street came out that way, and I didn't happen to like Greek Street, but I tried it for a buck, and I'm going to try Sweet Tooth, and if I like it, I'll be picking up the series. But, you know, I might not have tried this series if it was the full $2.99. So I really applaud Vertigo on doing that. You know, I think that's a really good marketing technique that they're using on these new series to try to encourage people to try things out.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, because anyone on the fence, you know, at the dollar price, certainly at the quarter price, there's no excuse not to try it. So I think it takes those that are undecided and pushes them in the correct direction. Okay, next up, another clip from Damien.
Hey guys, it's Damien back again with my third pick for the month, which is in the Vertigo section, and on page 113 we have Hellblazer number 259. Now, I have mentioned Hellblazer a lot before. I've been a big fan of Hellblazer. I've finished getting all my back issues for it as well. But this is one that actually really stood out to me, that something that I really want to see. As we know, as of 256, we've had Simon Bisley come on to start doing the covers for it. Well, this is the first issue where Simon Bisley is actually going to be doing the covers and the interiors as well. He's actually doing a two issues, actually, so it's going to be 259 and 260, where we're getting Simon Bisley art on the interior as well. Now, I've been a huge fan of Simon Bisley's art for a long time now. I sort of started off with the Slonia stuff in 2000 AD. I remember some of his actual Judge Dredd stuff, and of course getting into Lobo back in the early 90s. That was where it really introduced me to him as well. So, you know, I can't wait for anything that, you know, Simon Bisley's putting out. You know, I loved his Verotic stuff, no matter how bad the story was. But the art was fantastic with it. And Peter Milligan's actually been doing a really great job on the actual books themselves. So he had the joyous task of actually taking, you know, starting up after Andy Diggle finished his run. And he's just ran with it, and it's been really good. And, you know, first up, the art wasn't that great on it, but the art has been getting a lot better. But hey, with Bisley on there, how can you go wrong? So if you haven't been reading Hellblazer, it seems it's going to be actually the start of just the two-part story arc that's going to have Simon Bisley on. So it might be a good place to jump on if you've been wanting to get into it and you want to check out some what's happening in John's life. So as we know, John's actually one of the characters that ages year by year. So basically, he's been around for 20 years. He's 20, you know, aged 20 years in that amount of time. So really, if you haven't checked it out, I really would recommend checking it out. As I said, on page 113, and it is still a $2.99 book, so how can you go wrong with that? Okay, let's go back to the guys. Hey guys, Damien back again, and I know it's only been, you know, two pages since I actually last mentioned something here, but I have to mention this one as well. It is the Saga of the Swamp Thing, book number 2, and this is another hardcover, so this is actually continuing on with the Alan Moore Swamp Thing. We're getting issues 28 to 34, and Swamp Thing Annual number 2. So it's Alan Moore actually doing the writing on there. You've got Sean McManus, you've got Stephen Bissett, you've got John Toblin and Ron Randall on the art, and covers by Stephen Bissett and John Toblin. As we sort of learnt with the last one, it actually was starting from issues 20 and going through to 27. This is actually just continuing on from that. So if you've never read Swamp Thing before, I'd go pick up the first one. But the Alan Moore actual Swamp Thing is what really defined the character. It took him just from, you know, a superhero type of swamp beast through to what he actually became. And this one sort of went right through, if I remember correctly. He became one of the earth elementals and became part of the green, which is like the red that you see with Animal Man. So I really recommend this book. You know, it's Alan Moore's story, so how can you go wrong with that? And I don't think they actually even went up this far when they did the reprints for the Essential Vertigo Swamp Thing, so I think they only made it up to the mid-20s. So if you hadn't read it, you really need to check this one out. I would really recommend it. I've loved the stories, you know, and I'm getting the hardcovers as well, so check it out, and I'll let you go back to the guys.
Yeah, the Saga of the Swamp Thing hardcover covers before I was reading that series, and at some point I should probably get both this hardcover and the previous one. But I'm hitting about the limit of what I want to spend this month, so it won't be now. But I'll keep that one in mind.
Yeah, this is a classic series, so anyone who's not checked it out before, you certainly can't go wrong on this stuff. I mean, this is really probably what was the launching pad for Alan Moore's, you know, being considered, you know, master comic storyteller.
Oh, certainly. So. And I think it was eventually what, you know, launched Vertigo. You know, it was everything that we see in the Vertigo section now, I think, traces its origins back to this run on this series, because that's, again, where Constantine came out of, where, you know, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what established that, there's an audience here that we can do stuff for.
Yeah, and that stuff was all originally DC, and then it ultimately became Vertigo, but it had its roots here.
Yeah. And I would say Vertigo is probably the most successful imprint at Marvel and DC ever. I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to name any other imprint that kind of spun out of either the DC Universe or from new material that has had any sort of equivalent success.
Yeah.
So, and I'd even include the Ultimate line at Marvel in that is not as successful.
We're moving out of the DC section into Image, and on page 132 we've got a series called Underground. It's a 4-issue series. It's written by Jeff Parker, who's really been enjoying his work on Agents of Atlas over at Marvel. Art's by Steve Lieber, and this is about a park ranger, an avid caver, and it looks like, you know, it's some kind of mystery adventure set underground, thus the title. And we follow this park ranger as she investigates some strange things going on in the caves. And I read the 4-page preview that's here on page 133. Looks interesting. I like the art. And Jeff Parker certainly gets a nod from me, because he's been telling stories that have been highly entertaining to me of late. So having something that's a creator-owned project from him coming out of Image, I'm certainly going to give that one a try. So here you have it, page 132. If you have a previews catalog, check it out and check out the 4 pages that are reproduced on the next page over from that on 133. A special discount, 50% off. And now we've got Bill coming back to us.
This is Bill, DBM on the forum again, with my next pick. It is on page 136 of previews from Image Comics. It's The Beast, original graphic novel by Marion Churchland. Marion just completed a run on Elephant Men, where she was doing the art on Elephant Men for, I think, 3 issues. This graphic novel is her first published work, as far as I know, where she was both the writer and artist. I think her previous work has all been her as the artist, not writing. This is the story of a young sculptor who finds a job with a mysterious client who wants her to carve his likeness out of marble. The client turns out to be a shadowy creature, and the block of marble has a long history that threatens to engulf her entirely. Now, I have no idea what any of that means, other than it sounds very supernatural, and it's sure to be creepy, both creepy and engrossing. I think Marion is a wonderful artist, and I can't wait to delve into the storyteller portion of her brain. I already know that I like her art a lot. I'm excited to see a complete package from her where she's doing both the writing and the art. Personally, I really enjoy the single creator, seeing a single creator's vision come to life, where you know the writer has put their heart and soul into the piece, and you're getting that unified vision. There's some preview art in previews for this graphic novel, and the art is both sketchy So it's kind of sketchy in parts, and it's very delicate in others, so it has very delicate line work in others. And I think Marianne has a wonderful sense of storytelling, just the way she lays out her panels. So I'm definitely looking forward to this. And if it sounds like something you're interested in, that kind of supernatural story from a wonderful artist and storyteller, then I'd recommend picking this up. It's 152 pages, $15.99 from Image Comics, and again, it's Beast original graphic novel. Thanks.
Okay, and next up, another pick from Damien.
Hey guys, it's Damien back again with my second last pick for the month. This month is actually going to be from Image, which is Dead Space Extraction, which is a one-shot and it's on page 139. Now, if you remember around this time last year, we were actually having a Dead Space miniseries that actually came out with the release of the game, which was on, I think it was on Xbox or PS3, it was on that sort of console. And it was based around the humans had actually gone off exploring through space and trying to mine different planets and things along those lines. And with doing that, they uncovered these obelisk-type things with all these strange markings all over them. When they did that, basically, things started to go to hell. You had people turning into mutants. You had sort of this zombie type things going through there. And it was very reminiscent of the movie Event Horizon. So, you know, it's got that sort of hell comes to space type thing going on there. This is a one-shot which is actually being written by Anthony Johnson and the art's by Ben Temple-Smith. And both of them were the ones who actually were dealing with the creative process with the original one. So, you know, a lot of Ben's actual concept work that he created and everything for it actually turned into the game. And Anthony Johnson, even though he wrote the comic, he actually also helped out with the actual storyline that was going along with the actual game as well. So, and if you're wondering who they are, well, of course you know who Ben Temple-Smith is. He started off with 30 Days a Night, and there's a few other things he's done since then, and I'm sure that there's another one being mentioned this month by him as well. But Anthony Johnson is also known for Wasteland, so if you've been reading that title, which has been phenomenal, you know, you need to check that one out as well. But yeah, this is one that I'm picking this month. It's 32 pages, it's $3.50, and on page 139. So check it out if you like your sort of sci-fi horror type thing. You know, the first series was pretty good, so you know, it's only a one shot. Check it out. Okay, back to the guys.
Now, on the next page, page 140, we've got an item with a 50% discount through DCBS, and that's Dynamo 5, number 25. Now, this issue is $4.99, but for that $4.99, it's a 48-page comic with 45 pages of all-new material. So I think you're definitely getting your money's worth, because we've been told for a while that Dynamo 5, number 25, was going to have a bit of a shake-up and change things around. We finally get revealed what Maddie's dark secret is, and it's going to change Dynamo 5 forever, or at least that's what the solicitation blurb says. And with Jay Faerber, I believe that. And then the other, you know, space is going to be used to really do like 5 backup stories, presumably one for each of the members, to examine the changes that take place in this issue and really set it up for kind of the ongoing part of the series, where it goes from here. I've been enjoying this series a lot. I think Faerber is just on the edge of kind of becoming that kind of a breakout writer along the lines of like a Robert Kirkman or somebody like that. He's done a ton of great stuff. Dynamo 5 is definitely worth reading. This seems like it would probably be a decent jumping on point in so much as it's going to set the stage for everything that comes after, it sounds like. So at 50% off, you're only going to be paying $2.49 through DCBS. But even at the full, you know, $4.99 cover price, you compare that to one of these $3.99 books at Marvel where you're only getting the 22 pages of story, you're definitely getting a good deal here. And next up, another clip from Damien.
Hey guys, it's Damien back from the Cryptographic Podcast for my last pick for the month. And yes, I know it's not in the back of the book, but hey, I can't do that all the time. This one's actually from Top Cow, and this one is going to be The Darkness, issue 80. Now, the main reason I want to actually point this one out to you guys is, first up, it's actually the part one of a two-part story. Phil Hester is still doing the writing on this one, but also Phil's taking over the art for this issue and for the second part, which comes next month. So if you like Phil Hester's art and you like his writing, this is where you get both worlds on this one. So, hey, you know, you can't go wrong with that sort of thing. Now, if you hadn't been reading The Darkness, or you haven't picked it up since like the original series or anything like that, Jackie had lost actually his powers. He's been to hell, he's came back, he's, you know, actually only had half of the darkness sort of working for him. He'd basically convinced himself that he couldn't actually use it correctly. And he's only just got back to full strength after he's been, well, tricked into going around and killing demons on Earth by another demon who just wants him to do the dirty work. Well, this is where he's actually going after the character that set him on this, which is the Sovereign, and basically he's heading into a swamp on a quest to destroy every representation of the Sovereign on the throughout the world. And this one's called the Bog, so it seems like there's going to be some sort of swamp-type thing going on there. So, really, Phil Hester art, Phil Hester story. The book's only $2.99, and you know, it has been a phenomenal run so far. Like, I've always liked The Darkness, but the fact that what Phil's been doing with it has just been great with it. This one actually does even come with a mature audience graphic content sticker in previews, so I wouldn't buy it for your four-year-old. But The Darkness always has been along those lines. But hey, you know, if you haven't seen anything like this, then this is a good point to jump onto it. Okay then, that's it for me for the month. I shall let you get back to Bob and John, and I shall speak to you all next month.
And an unusual month for Damien in that he doesn't have anything out of the back half of previews for us this month.
I know. I mean, we haven't even hit Marvel. We're not even done with the premier publishers, and he's done. It's like, I feel we should just end the episode now. But clearly we've got a lot more to do, because, I mean, the back half of previews and Marvel as well usually has some great stuff. So, diving into the Marvel previews, we have two picks from Randy. Let's listen to both of those.
Randy Z back yet again with a pick now out of the Marvel's preview on page 6, The Marvel's Project, 2 of 8. If you have read Captain America Reborn, there's a bit at the end of it which gives a prelude to the Marvel's Project. I'm kind of getting an idea of where they're going with this. It looks like there's a bit of time jumping back and forth. Looks like this could be very interesting. Again, I have an affinity for Golden Age characters, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing where they're going to go with this. So, I definitely would recommend picking these up if you're interested at all in Golden Age, like I am. You'll probably be interested. So there you go, Marvel's Project, number 2 of 8. And back to you, Bob and John. Randy Z here again with another pick out of the Marvel preview book on page 9, The Torch, 1 of 8. This is something I've been waiting a long time for and was hoping they were going to do at the end of one of those latest issues of Captain America where they put Jim Hammond in the ground. Also, if you happen to have read the last issue of Avengers Invaders, that gives a little bit of a preview on the last page as to how this is going to start out. I always wondered why Stan Lee decided to make Johnny Storm the Human Torch when they created the Fantastic Four. I always got the thought that he was going to bring these characters back anyway, and it seems to me it would have been a better idea to make Johnny Storm something else other than the Torch so he could bring the original Human Torch back. But that's hindsight, and so many years of continuity and popularity, what can you say? But at any rate, I've always been looking forward to them bringing the original Human Torch back. He was kind of an interesting character to me, and yeah, in the Golden Age he was a little on the one-dimensional side, but I always thought they could do something interesting with him in the 60s and 70s, and definitely in the 90s to 2000s. So this is really something I've been looking forward to for quite a while. I definitely recommend The Torch, 1 of 8. Let's hope this is a great story. I'm looking forward to it. Back to you once again, Bob and John.
Both of those are great picks. I'm really looking forward to the Marvels project, and I'm really curious what they're going to do, both with bringing back the original Human Torch and Toro. And again, if you like some of these older characters and you did not read the Avengers Invaders miniseries, pick it up when it comes in trade or go hunt down the issues. It was some great stuff. Some of the stuff they did with the Human Torch in that series I thought was really cool. Now, kind of sort of related to both of those picks is our next pick on page 11. Of the Marvel previews, and that's the Marvel Mystery Handbook 70th Anniversary Special. Now, as most regular listeners know, I'm a big fan of these handbooks. I'm just a data junkie at heart. But the reason I wanted to pick this as a DCBS 50% off pick is because the characters it's going to cover include all the stuff from that kind of first year of Marvel that, you know, gave us the Submariner, the Human Torch, the Angel, characters which are going to be in the Marvels project, and obviously the Torch in the Torch, but also Black Widow, Phantom, Bullet, Electro, Mystery, Dynamic Man, Phantom Reporter, all those characters from the 12, which hopefully they'll get the last four issues out eventually. But they're looking at that kind of initial origin of what grew into the Marvel Universe, and they did a series of decade handbooks a while back, and I found the one from the 60s, which again is that foundation era for Marvel, really fascinating. Because you could see what the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby versions of, you know, the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, I mean, everything that we're reading today, everything that's really in this Marvel's preview this month, all of it goes back to what Stan and his various collaborators built up in that early bullpen at Marvel. And some of this in this handbook even predates that, which is the seeds they were working with. So even if you don't normally get the handbooks, I recommend this one as well as that 60s handbook. It's really cool to see kind of the initial takes on these characters. Again, 50% off. Cover price is $4.99, but it is 64 pages. With these handbooks, that is cover to cover. There are no ads. There's usually a text piece on the inside, front and back covers, giving a little explanation here and there. But you're getting 64 pages of content for that. Next up, a pick from Mike Myers.
Mike Myers is back again with my Marvel pick, and it's on page 58 of your Marvel previews. And it's Nomad, Girl Without a World. It's written by Sean McKeever and penciled by David Baldion and covers by Raphael Albuquerque. It's 32 pages, $3.99, and why am I picking this choice? Well, I'm picking this book solely for the creator. Writer, Sean McKeever. I really enjoyed what he did with Terror Titans and what he's done with Sentinel, the Inhumans, Birds of Prey. So I'm pretty much following the writer. So this is his first work back with Marvel because he was on a DC exclusive and now he's back. And this character came out of the Heroes Reborn thing when Liefeld and Lee went to go work for Marvel, and came out of the Liefeld Extreme Studios division. I'm not a big fan of the character, but I'm really curious to see what Sean McKeever is going to do with her. And she also appeared, I believe, in the Thunderbolt series for a while. But in her world, Ricky Barnes was the modern-day Bucky, teen sidekick to Captain America. In this world, the Cap she knew is dead. She never existed, and very little else is as she remembers. With no home, no income, and no legal identity, what's a girl to do? How about tracking down the new Cap, reconnecting with her brother, and running afoul of the Secret Empire? Sounds like a plan to us. So give it a try. I think if you're a Sean McKeever fan, definitely give it a try. But he does really good with characters of this nature, like he did with Ravager. I thought he breathed a lot of new life into Ravager. And Nomad seems like a similar type character, so give it a try. And it's on page 58 of previews. Now back to Bob and John.
I'm looking forward to this one, and again for the same reasons. I think McKeever has done some really, really good stuff over the years, and this character, while I've read all of her previous appearances, I kind of like, but don't have a huge passion for the character. But this seems, and I agree with Mike, that it's a good character for McKeever to work with, and he could probably do a lot with. So, should be fun. Okay, next up is a pick from Trevor Chapman.
Hello, it's Trevor Chapman, and for my fourth and final pick from the July 2009 previews, you would turn to page 62 of your Marvel's previews insert, and you would find The Vengeance of the Moon Knight, issue number 1, written by Greg Hurwitz and penciled by Jerome Opeña. It is the first in what appears to be a new ongoing series for our dear friend, the Moon Knight. When we last left the Moon Knight, he had just finished destroying himself or making himself appear dead, and then spent a six-issue arc in Mexico. This basically is picking up kind of where that left off, as he's now got a whole new fortune, and he's considered, or at least one of his personas is considered dead, and he's coming back to basically pay back Norman Osborn for making him lose everything he thought he had before. The good news about this is that a lot of people were complaining about the Moon Knight series with the fact that he was completely insane, and the comic seems aimless or directionless. I'm hoping that with this restart of this comic that we'll see that it'll go back to some of the original ideas of him being a street-level vigilante who is out for vengeance and maybe a little bit crazy, but not completely off of his kilter. So give it a try. I know that Jerome Opeña is an excellent artist, and that all I can tell about Greg Hurwitz is I believe this is his first foray into comics, or certainly comics, you know, that are on the forefront. Anyways, thank you very much to the comic book page guys for having an excellent monthly series of podcasts, and I look forward to talking to you guys later.
Pretty sure Greg Hurwitz has done something else before, but it's not hitting me on
top. It was the Max stuff, because we talked about this on the previous teleconference.
That's right.
He did some of the
Fool
Max.
Killer.
Yeah, Fool Killer and Punisher.
Right. And we're going to take the bullet on this one, and you and I are going to read this, and we'll review it on our show, the weekly one.
Yeah, because a different Trevor was on the previews call, and he's like, well, you know, Moon Knight's got to prove itself to me. So I'm like, you're going to pick this up? He's like, no. You know, wait until I hear good things about it. It's like, well, how can it prove itself if you're not going to read it? It's like, I'll wait for you guys to read it. It's like, oh, man. Because I agree with what this Trevor was saying on how the previous series was aimless, and at least what little I read of it, because I dropped it around issue 8 or something, and the character was just completely insane. So I'll give this a try. I'm not planning on pre-ordering anything after the first issue until I read the first issue.
Now, I dropped the first series around issue 4, and then I picked it up again because I was hearing some people saying they liked it. I picked it up again in the 20s and stuck with it for 2 or 3 issues and gave it a try again and didn't care that much for it, and then dropped it a second time. So I'll give it another try here because, I mean, I intrinsically like the Moon Knight character. I loved it back in the 70s and 80s, It was a very popular character, and it's just, I'd love to see Marvel get back on track with this character, because I think it is, at its core, a good character.
Now, the issues in the 20, was that the crossover with the Thunderbolts or whatever? Because I think, yeah, I picked those up too and dropped it also. So, I mean, in my mind, they've tainted the character. So hopefully this will get past it, because I really enjoyed the run of Moon Knight back, what was that, the 80s or the 90s?
The good one, I think, was in the 80s. Yeah.
Fair enough.
The one with Sienkiewicz on it, and it might have bled over a little into the 90s, but I mean, I really liked the multiple personalities on the character when they were, it seemed, a facility of him being able to, you know, get down to the street level stuff with Jake Locksley, and, you know, he was Moon Knight, and he had been the mercenary Mark Spector, and he had the millionaire playboy identity that, you know, is from the money he made being a mercenary and stuff. But I mean, he had reasons for each of the personalities that he slipped into, and it wasn't that he was just, you know, bug nut crazy, that he had like multiple personality disorder and, you know, couldn't help himself and all this kind of business that it later devolved into.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't like my heroes to be insane. This is, you know, a small deficiency on my part, perhaps. But, you know, I don't like my heroic ideals to be mentally imbalanced. So just me. Okay, so I'm up with the conclusion to Old Man Logan on page 66. Now, this is a fabulous series that ran in Wolverine before it kind of went off the rails there. And, you know, I think the argument could very legitimately be made that this should have been a standalone miniseries in the first place. So it ran for a number of issues on a relatively sporadic basis in Wolverine, and then the last part of it now is a giant-sized Old Man Logan. That's a one-shot. Here, it's going to conclude the series, and Wolverine is going to be having his final confrontation with the Hulk gang, and they say to the death. So I'm really interested to see how they're going to wrap this one up, and probably one of the better Wolverine stories that I've seen in a long time, probably since Enemy of the State, which I thought was pretty good. Romita Jr. worked on that one too, and this one has been a long time coming, so hopefully this will come out on some semblance of when it's supposed to be out here as it's solicited, and we'll see the conclusion of that story.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that one end, and hopefully end with a very solid conclusion. Okay, next up is yet another Wolverine title. This time it's Wolverine First Class, number 19, on page 75 of the Marvel Previews. We've got this at a 50% discount, as we did with the Old Man Logan one. Reason we picked this, I have been recently kind of catching up on the reading that, you know, I had gotten behind on with the budget cuts, and I was reading a bunch of issues of Wolverine First Class, was always enjoying it, and then I noticed that for the last couple of issues, it's been written by Peter David, and I hadn't realized that. And I know that Peter David has a definite following out there. He's a very talented writer. This is an excellent use of him as a writer, because it plays to his strengths of his sense of humor, his ability to do kind of, I don't say lighthearted stuff, but things that are all ages appropriate without being written down. You know, there's a appropriate innocence to this title. It is something that you could give to younger readers and not fear you're going to completely traumatize them or something. It's, I find it to be a very enjoyable read. I've always been a fan of Kitty Pryde, and since at the moment I'm not going to be seeing her in any of the current X-Men books, this is pretty much where she's, you know, front and center, and teaming up with Wolverine, which I think is always a fun pairing. So I've been enjoying all the issues of this I've read. Peter David's been on board as the writer for a couple issues. I don't know if that's going to be an ongoing thing or if he's just doing it, you know, while he can or whatever, but certainly I recommend this title, and it's worth picking up. It's $2.99. Again, we've got this issue at a 50% discount, so it's not going to set you back that much if you get it through DCBS. And then finishing out our picks from the Marvel previews is one that I'm virtually positive you're getting as well, Bob, but I'm really looking forward to, and that's the Marvel Masterwork Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Volume 2 on page 87. We've got a 50% discount through there, through DCBS, and this is almost entirely done by Jim Steranko. Roy Thomas pitches in for some of it. This collects Strange Tales 154 through 168 and Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. 1 through 3. We discussed the first volume of this with Jason Wood from 11 O'Clock Comics on one of our back issue spotlights. And if you like super spy stuff, you know, this is the epitome of it in comic book form. And, you know, we're getting to the part here where Steranko, with his, you know, visual designs and stuff like that, really kicks it into high gear. So I'm looking forward to it. Definitely recommend it. Okay, taking us back into the main previews. We've got a pick from somebody we haven't heard from on these episodes in a while, and that's Tim the Tiki Rackrich. Let's listen to that.
Thank you very much. This next song.
On January 13th, 1968, Johnny Cash recorded one of the most legendary live albums of all time at Folsom Prison.
The song was written by our friend Glenn Shirley. And
Cash had a special connection with his audience. They recognized Johnny as a loner, an outlaw, and a blue-collar everyman who fought his own demons daily. This unique relationship grew to an amazing crescendo that special night when Cash closed the concert with a song written by an inmate named Glenn Shirley.
Inside the walls of prison, my body may be, but my Lord has set my soul free.
The song was called Greystone Chapel.
The Greystone Chapel here at Folsom. A house of worship in this den of sin. You wouldn't think that God had a place here at Folsom, but he saved the soul of many lost men.
When the song finished, an audience of crooks, rapists, and killers removed the tears. They shed their macho personas for just one moment to reflect on the words that one of their fellow inmates penned was being preached to them by a god dressed in black.
But the door to the house of God is never locked. Inside the walls of prison,
Reinhard Kleist's graphic novel, Johnny Cash, I See Darkness, is the award-winning biography of this American music icon. The unique twist to the book is that it's told through the eyes of the Folsom Prison inmate, Glenn Shirley, who wrote that fabled song and was serving a life sentence. Glenn Shirley shows how a man's inner demons can either make you a star or just make you a no-name crook. If you're a fan of such books like Comic Book Tattoo or Phonogram, I think this might be right up your alley. Give it a try. This is the Freaky Tiki. Aloha.
And I thank the Lord for helping me.
And a stunning return to the show by Tim with great clip there that incorporates music as well, which is very appropriate for a Johnny Cash book. So thanks a lot for the contribution, Tim. And right next to that, on the very same page of previews, page 182, we have the Strangers in Paradise Omnibus Limited Edition. This is 1,074 pages. It is slipcased. Hardcover, I think it's in multiple volumes. It will be the entire Strangers in Paradise. And I thought I read somewhere that This has been recut because anyone who read Strangers in Paradise, I know I did, and things kind of jump around in time a little bit in there. And I think this is going to be remixed so that it tells the story in chronological order. I'm not completely certain on that, but I had heard that. This is $160, and there is a special discount at DCBS that puts this at 50% off. However, it's limited to 1,250 signed and numbered units, and I have been hearing that people are saying it's sold out. Now, I don't know how it can be sold out because the final order cutoff has not happened. So what that probably means is that orders are exceeding 1,250, or at least early orders, and what usually is going to happen there is Diamond will then do allocations to retailers based on their orders.
I'd be surprised if retailers have even sent in their orders yet. We're still too early in the month for that, and most retailers seem to, from what I hear anecdotally, not do that stuff until, you know, the last minute when they, you know, have to do it just because they're busy, you know, running their shops and stuff. So I don't see how this could be sold out already.
Yeah, and, you know, it could very well be the case that, I don't know, I mean, I find it a little hard to believe that you're going to have a couple of thousand people willing to plop down $160 for this. It's a really good good work. I'm going to buy a copy. I'm going to try to buy a copy. I'm putting in an order for a copy. But I'm really looking forward to it. I read Strangers in Paradise in the pocketbook format originally. I did not pick it up when it came out in original comics form, but I heard so many good things about it from people that I ended up picking up the pocket trade paperbacks, which was a really nice and economical way to get into the series. And it is a lot of material. And I read those. I loved it. So being able to pick up a single large hardback on this is something that I am going to look forward to. And I'll have some autographed trade paperbacks that someone can probably talk me out of if they want to buy those off me once I get the hardcover. So that's what I've got going on there. I think this is a tremendous series, and anyone who's never tried it out, probably diving into $160 hardcover is not necessarily the most economical way, because you may or may not like it. What I would recommend is if you've never tried Strangers in Paradise, go ahead and try to pick up the first pocketbook on that. You can have that for about $15 or $16 or so and get a nice good read out of that. So that was my pick on this particular page. And then we're going to take a little jump forward to page 206 with Avatar. And we've got The Chronicles of Wormwood, The Last Battle. And this is Garth Ennis. He's returning to his Chronicles of Wormwood series. And Wormwood is actually the Antichrist. And he is, this is a relatively, well, one would expect from Garth Ennis, an irreverent series that features the Antichrist himself going and doing some crazy stuff. In this one, he started to get his life back together after averting the apocalypse in the previous series. And he is going to be having a confrontation because Pope Jocko is trying to take over hell. And this is, if you're deeply religious, don't come anywhere near this book. This is a, you know, relatively sacrilegious work, as one might expect. You got the Antichrist running around and kicking butt. You got a Pope in here that is, you know, kind of a not nice character. There's some pretty scathing commentary on organized religion and things like that. But if that sounds like something that might be interesting to you, it's worth a shot. You know, got Chronicles of Wormwood, The Last Battle, number one, page 206.
Okay, next up, another clip from Billy Masters.
Hi, this is Bill, DMVO on the forum, with my last pick. This is on page 212 Yeah, 212 of previews. It is Bart Simpson's Treehouse of Horror number 15 from Bongo Comics. Now, each year, Bongo does something special with their Treehouse of Horror Simpsons comics. And this year is no exception. This year is pretty much a who's who of hot indie creators. Not that this contains all the hot indie creators that are out there, but certainly it contains comics by a wonderful example of some of the better indie creators out there. This is edited by the creator of Kramer's Ergot, which is a highly regarded, award-winning, really expensive anthology series that comes out yearly, I believe. This issue features the work of many artists, including Jordan Crane, CF, who did Power Masters, John Kirschbaum, who did Pete and Pussy, Kevin Huizenga, who did numerous titles, Jeffrey Brown, Ted May, who did Injury, and many more. These are just some awesome creators who have really unique styles. Some of these artists, I am surprised that they're doing this, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do with the Simpsons universe and what they're going to do with these characters. And I got to give, you know, accolade to Bongo for doing this, for choosing these artists or these creators, because some of them are quite surprising that they're going to be in this, and I'm very excited to see what they are going to do with this universe. We have had examples of indie creators doing more mainstream work in the past. There was DC did a Bizarro comics a few years back that featured a lot of indie creators, and Marvel is bringing out, I think it's Strange Tales. I think it's solicited this month with a bunch of indie creators, including Dash Shaw, by the way. So this is kind of falls in line with those. This is 48 pages. It's $4.99. I'd get this if you're into The Simpsons, but probably if you're into The Simpsons, you're getting this already. Or if you're just interested in seeing, you know, work from many of the hot indie creators or from the indie world, and getting a chance to see them in a known universe. So it's going to be characters you know and lover like, and to your chance to see their take on it. Plus it's cheaper than Kramer's Ergot, so and a bit smaller, but definitely cheaper. And personally, I just can't wait to see a few of these artists take on The Simpsons. Especially I'm looking forward to seeing Jeffrey Brown's version of The Simpsons, because I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around that. And CF, who did Power Masters, if you've ever seen his work, it's pretty out there, so I'm real curious to see what he's gonna do with The Simpsons. And a lot of these creators, they're wonderful indie creators, you know, and wonderful with their own creations, so it's gonna be interesting to see what they do with The Simpsons, so This should be one to look out for. All right, thanks.
Okay, our next pick is on that same page of 212, right next to it, and that is Walt Disney's Comics and Stories number 699. We've got a 45% discount through DCBS on both this and the Mickey Mouse and Friends right below it. These two titles used to be over at Gemstone. They have now moved to Boom Studios. So we figured we would highlight those, give you guys a reason to check these out. I'm looking forward to the Walt Disney Comics and Stories $6.99 because it is starring their superhero characters of the Duck Avengers, Super Goofy, and the others. I'm really pleased with what Boom's doing these days in terms of doing a Boom Kids type stuff that this falls squarely into, and is just a great property for younger readers. And really, I mean, Boom is just got such a wide, diverse, and really good landscape of titles these days. I mean, if you're at, be it the San Diego convention, a Wizard convention, or any of the conventions, and Boom has a booth, go check that booth out. Flip through everything they've got. You're going to find something you like. Again, I really recommend both the Walt Disney Comics and Stories, $6.99, the Mickey Mouse and Friends, $2.96. These are the first issues through Boom. Cover price is $2.99 after discount. It's $1.64. These both look really good, so check them out.
Okay, and next up, another pick from Boom Studios on the next page over. Go over to page 214, and we've got a second series on the unknown, this one called The Devil Made Flesh. It's a second installment of the world's greatest detective, Catherine Allingham, and we're going to see what happens next after the first series. I don't know how the first series is going to end yet. We talked about the series a couple of weeks ago on the weekly show. John and I both love it, and don't know how the first one's going to end, but there will be a second one, and I'll be there right along with John for this one because I'm loving what Wade is doing with this series. So that's about it. If you haven't read The Unknown, it's not too late. I think you can still get the first two issues of the first series at your local comic shop and try it out.
Okay, next us up, taking us over to Dynamite, is Randy. Let's listen to his clip.
Hey everybody, Randy Z one more time for my last pick. It's in the Dynamite Entertainment section. I'm sure Bob and John knows where I'm going with this. Page 232 and 233. This is a double one. Project Superpowers Chapter 2, Number 3, and Project Superpowers Meet the Bad Guys, 2 of 4. The Project Superpowers storyline has been really great. It's interesting how they're splitting up the teams so that the Superpowers team is there to keep an eye on the government, which seems to be corrupt, and they're kids' sidekicks are there to keep an eye on the Superpowers team to make sure that they're not going to get corrupt. Liking the storyline, liking all the characters. They don't get too far into any one character in particular, other than if you've read the individual books of, like, The Death-Defying Devil or The Black Terror. I have a feeling they will eventually get more into the backgrounds and their particular personalities sometime in the future. But as of now, to me, it's a great team book. The Meet the Bad Guys looks interesting because, you know, we really get to look at some of the villains that they used to fight back in the Golden Age. We really didn't see too much of that in the first Project Superpowers series. So this looks to be fairly interesting series to come about also. So can't recommend it enough. It's been a great series so far. Let's see where they're going to go with it. So that's about it for this month. Thank you, Bob and John. Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you next month.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to both Project Superpowers Chapter 2 and Project Superpowers Meet the Bad Guys. I'm really enjoying kind of exploring this world, seeing the new takes on these older characters. It's a lot of fun. Definitely recommend those. Okay, next up, we've got a clip from Zach. Let's listen to that.
Hey, John and Bob, this is Zach Cruzy coming to you live, or, well, pre-recorded, I guess, from my Nerdatorium. And I'm just getting a hold of you guys with my July previews pick of the month. For those of you who know me personally or know me through message boards or shows or something like that, I'm sure this pick probably does not come as a big surprise to you. But my pick is Strange Suspense, the Steve Ditko Archives Volume 1 from Fantagraphics Books. You can find the solicitation for this fine product on page 254 of your previews catalog. So, without further ado, let's hop right into the solicitation. At last! The book you've been waiting for your entire life. Before Spider-Man and Doctor Strange, before Ayn Rand and Mr. A, legendary comic book genius Steve Ditko was conjuring all manner of horrors at his creepy drawing table. Join Fantagraphics as we cast our spell with this full-color collection of pre-code Ditko comics. Every story from the first 2 years of Steve Ditko's magnificent and mysterious career will be presented with our trademark common sense and attention to detail. And that is fantastic news. I'm really looking forward to getting this book. I have many of these comics in single issue already. Some of them I don't. But this is a great collection of comic work. And it's something that I will be proud to have on my bookshelf and proud to share with family and friends, whether they are familiar with comics or not. So, as an example of comic art and what comic art can be and the sophistication of it, the book itself is $39.99 retail, which I think is a fantastic price, honestly. I would be more than willing to pay $39.99 for this. But if you're a DCBS customer, and I'm sure many of you are, then you get this fantastic volume for just $19.99, 50% off the cover price. What I really want to say about this book, though, is that, and why I'm doing this pick, is not just because it's a Ditko book. It's because it is, it's a piece of comic history. It really is a milestone in comic art. And what I mean by that is, it may not be a milestone, you know, in the eyes of many fans, because they consider milestones to be something more like Amazing Fantasy 15 or Action Comics number 1 or something like that. It's a milestone in that you see the coming of one of the greatest artists who have ever been in comics. And you see the coming of an artist, of one of the few artists at this time, to get into comics for the sake of comics. You know, a lot of us get really hung up on the work of Kirby or Neil Adams or Will Eisner or something like that, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with it because those guys are fantastic, amazing, amazing artists. But Ditko is different, not just in terms of style, but in terms of what he brings to the table with his personality, with his art, and his passion and his reason for being in comics. A lot of guys at the time were coming into comics because they saw it as a gateway to advertising or animation or something like that. Not the case with Ditko. Ditko was there for the sake of comics, because he loved comic art, and there's something important about that, and there's something about that attitude that really comes through on the page with his stuff. Most of these stories are going to be that are in this volume are horror stories, and if you pick this up, and I really, really hope that you do, as a fan of comics, you should at least check it out somewhere. Anyway, back to what I was saying, the horror comic, as drawn by Ditko, is an amazing thing. You see a lot of really great work in, you know, over at EC and later with Warren, in the horror genre. But what Ditko does is different. You can read the words if you want, and you'll probably think the dialogue is dated, which is probably true, but you don't need to read the words in a Ditko comic to understand what you're supposed to feel. If you just look at the line, and if you look at the shadow, and the expressions he puts on his characters' faces, you get this overwhelming sense of dread when you're supposed to. And when he wants you to feel claustrophobic, you feel claustrophobic because of the panel layouts and because of, you know, what's going on in the background. When he wants you to feel tension, he makes you feel tension. It's not like something you have to force yourself to experience when you read this stuff. It's there. It's in your face. It's ready to go. It's just really a beautiful, beautiful thing. And
it really stands out when compared to other popular comics at the time. You know, a lot of what you are seeing in this era, and you know, in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s, is simpler designs, because most mainstream comics were aimed at juveniles. That doesn't mean I think the art is juvenile. It's certainly not. It's done by professionals. But Ditko's art doesn't cater to a juvenile crowd. Ditko's art is art. Children and kids can look at it, and they can certainly appreciate it, and I'm sure many are sophisticated enough to understand the feelings you're supposed to get when you look at it. But what he's doing is creating art that looks fantastic on a comic page, but could just as easily be framed and examined on a wall and studied. What he does, and it hasn't really been seen up to this point, and isn't really seen much after this point, except, and certainly in mainstream comics, until he hits it big again with, you know, Spidey and Doctor Strange. So, what you are getting when you get this book is an experience. You're not just getting a book to look on, to put on your shelf to look pretty or to make you look, you know, look artsy. You're getting an experience, and you're getting something important, and you're experiencing something that's very important, not just to comics, but to art. So I really hope that you guys check this out, because it's some of my absolute favorite Ditko stuff. Between this and his Warren work and his creator-owned work with Mr. A and The Avenging World, this is some of my absolute favorite stuff that he's ever done. So get out there, check it out. I really don't think you'll be disappointed. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful book. And one quick thing to add, it's edited by Blake Bell. For those of you who may not know who Blake is, Blake is, for lack of a better term, the premier Ditko scholar, if such a thing exists. And he runs the website Ditko Looked Up. And he also is the author of Strange and Stranger, The World of Steve Ditko, which is the Ditko biography, which also came out from Fantagraphics last year. So get out there, grab this book, check it out, and experience it as a comic fan. And know that comics were something more, and always have been something more. And it's largely due to Ditko and Eisner and Kirby. But don't forget Ditko. Alright, guys. Thanks so much for your time, and I'm sorry to blather on. I just get so passionate about this type of stuff. So, check out the book, and back to you, John and Bob.
Yeah, Ditko, I think, is one of those kind of underrated artists, because, I mean, I think most people know him from the Spider-Man stuff, but I believe he had a lot to do with The Question, Blue Beetle, I'm trying to think of some of the other characters.
Well, Doctor Strange, he was instrumental in that whole weird, you know, other dimensional stuff in Doctor Strange.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely, if you're into Steve Ditko and want to see some of his early works, this is just a great opportunity to do that. Okay, now for our last clip of the month, and that's from Mike Myers. Let's see what he has to say.
Mike Myers here again with my last and final choice. It's my indie choice of the month. It's on page 261, and it's G.I. Joe Cobra Special number 1. It's written by Mike Costa, and Antonio Fuso is doing the artwork. And it's the creative team that brought you the G.I. Joe Classified 1 through 4, which was co-written by Christos Gage. I absolutely love this series, and I'm not a G.I. Joe fan. G.I. Joe's brand spanking new to me. And Chuckles is the main character on here, and he's made me love G.I. Joe. I'm also getting the other G.I. Joe books, but this book is by far the best one. And the cover price is $3.99, but it's worth every penny. So I was sad to see that it was just a mini series, but I'm glad that they're continuing it on with a special. So please check it out. It's on page 261 of previews. And if you read the 4-issue series and loved it, you ought to love this. Plus, if you're into a character that is trying to go deep undercover into the Cobra organization, you will love this series. So give it a shot. Thanks a lot. And you can get my podcast at www.geekbrunchpodcast.com and www.dcnoisepodcast.com. And thanks again, Bob and John, for letting me submit these. I appreciate it. Thanks. Bye.
And DCBS has that G.I. Joe Cobra special at a 50% discount, so it'll only set you back $1.99. Now, a few pages later, still in IDW, we've got a pick with a 50% discount, and that's Star Trek Romulan's Schism on page 264. And this is the final arc in John Byrne's Romulan's tale. And I'm liking pretty much all of the stuff, Star Trek stuff that IDW is doing, but the John Byrne stuff, I mean, he's got a real passion for Star Trek, an understanding and an appreciation of it that really comes across on the page. And I've enjoyed the other Romulan stuff he's done, the Star Trek crew that he's done, the Assignment Earth that he's done. So I hope after he's finished up his stuff on the Romulans, he's going to tackle some more Star Trek, because it's fun to read. It is also $3.99, but, you know, it's kind of a standard price for IDW. 50% off, it'll only set you back $1.99.
And next in IDW, if you flip a couple of pages down, we have The Waiting Place, a graphic novel on page 269. Now, this is something that Sean McKeever wrote, and Sean has been writing a lot of mainstream comics. He's also done a lot of indie stuff prior to his current work with things like Teen Titans and Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane and stuff like that. But this is one of his highly acclaimed works that is kind of outside the realm of stuff that I normally buy. They're, you know, I always just call it kind of like slice of life stuff. It's a teen drama. However, it's got art by primarily Mike Norton, and I love Mike's art. And here we have a giant 300-page, essentially definitive edition of this entire seminal work by these guys. And we've got a 50% off DCBS discount on it. So for $15, I am absolutely looking forward to picking this thing up and having a look at what this is about. Because again, I have heard nothing but good things about this book from everybody who's ever read it. So I'm going to definitely be trying this out. Page 269, 300 pages, $30. And half off at DCBS for $15.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat of having heard about it, not having read it, but being big fans of both Sean McKeever and Mike Norton. So I'm right there with you. I'm definitely going to be getting it too.
And then we have our last selection of the month, and that is going to be on page 287. Sorry, in Red 5. And Red 5, they have done a lot of books that I have loved, Neozoic, Atomic Robo, Abyss, and their latest series is called Beautiful Creatures. It's a two-issue series. Those two issues are extra-sized, 56 pages, we figure, taking out the ads and such, that this would be a double-sized issue with probably at least 44 pages of story content in it. So you're getting two issues worth of material for the $4.95 cover price, which is actually a little cheaper than if you bought two $2.95 comics. And the premise here is that they say we all have a monster lurking inside of us. And here we have four beautiful college girls who uncover their secret passengers. And what this is that they're mystical creatures that are hiding within people and will be struggling to come out, and we're going to be exploring a magic hidden world of awakening, wonder, and monsters in this double-size issue. And I'm I'm willing to give this a shot. I've loved pretty much everything Red 5 has put out. We've got a 45% off DCBS discount on this one. So check it out. And I think that'll do it for us for this month, except for the summary information. I had about $1,200 at retail. And again, I have a lot of stuff on my, you know, I've got a couple of Randy Bowen busts. I've got a bunch of hardcovers. That Strangers in Paradise omnibus is, you know, $160 at retail. Marvel Masterworks that we talked about, and lots of other things like that that pump up the total price. But on the other hand, it does come down quite a bit through the marvelous wonder of DCBS. So I am grateful to those guys. My total is actually down at $733. And, you know, coming off of $1,200, that's very welcome. My discount percent in general, and this includes shipping, is 38.9% this month, which is actually a pretty decent discount to be getting on this stuff. And until the federal government clamps down on such things, I'm not paying sales tax on that either. So that saves me, living in California, an extra 10% that I'd be paying in sales tax. Not hold my breath for that to keep up forever.
I'm only saving about 8.25% on the sales tax, but still, that does add up. Okay, so I got 190 items. I'm not getting the big ticket items for the most part, although I got a few more this month than usual. My total is $827.82 at retail. After discounts, shipping, and bags and boards and all that stuff, $504.95, which works out to an even 39% discount. And that's, again, including a couple of high-ticket items, that Usagi hardcover. I got a Batman Chronicles in there. I've got the Marvel Masterwork Nick Fury, which is actually the biggest ticket item, and then that Waiting Place graphic novel as well, a trade paperback. And I got a few other things that I may toss on here. I just... that's where my order stands at the moment.
And I uploaded mine yesterday to DCBS. I'm set.
I'll get mine in before I leave for Comic-Con, but have not done that yet. Again, we have an open submission policy on these things, so anyone who wants to submit a clip can do so. We have some basic instructions on our forum, which you can get to at www.comicbookpage.com. Just click on the forum link on the menu bar there. You know, we welcome as many submissions as possible. We like to have as wide a variety of viewpoints as possible. I hadn't noticed that Johnny Cash thing when I went through previews. While it's not something I'm interested in, it is something I'm going to point out to my sister who might be interested in it. So that's why we like getting submissions, is there's stuff that we just don't always notice when going through the 500 pages or whatever of previews.
And, as always, check out the forum. We usually have a thread that started up about the previews episode. And if you do want to make a submission, just check out the thread, because people usually put, they kind of call dibs on something that they want to send in a clip about. That just keeps us from getting duplicate clips on the same items. So go out there, you just throw up a quick post and say, hey, I'd like to do whatever that looked interesting to you. And like John said, it's always nice to hear from other people and what caught their eye in the previews catalog.
And if you make it to one of these conventions, again, be it San Diego, Chicago, or wherever, and you're picking up a title because either you heard about it on one of our previews episodes or because we reviewed it on one of our weekly comic spotlight episodes, please go up to the publishers and the creators and tell them that. Just let them know that, you know, you were introduced to their book by our podcast. And the reason I say that is that way they become aware of kind of the power of podcasting, and That way, if they want to use us for marketing in terms of if they want to do interviews or whatever, it helps everybody. We're doing all of this, particularly these spotlight episodes, to get people introduced to or aware of comics that they would be enjoying in time to go to their store, to pre-order it, to make sure it's there when they want it. And it benefits everybody that way.
And that's the other key item you just hit there, John, which I don't think we mentioned so far this month, and that is go to your shop and let them know you want these books. The reason that we do this now, especially for the non-Marvel DC stuff, is a lot of comic shops don't order this stuff. They might order just for their pull list customers, and you're not necessarily going to be able – I can almost guarantee you you're not going to be able to walk into a comic shop and find that Johnny Cash book, okay? It's just not going to happen. And if you see something like that that sounds interesting to you, go to your comic shop now when they're putting together their order. They'll order it for you, and then they'll have it. And even better, they might say, if you like it, you know, I might recommend it to other people who have similar taste to you. They might order an extra copy for their shop and expose another person to that comic book. And that makes everybody a winner. And it's really key for us to go and let our shop owners know what it is that's got us excited.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely.
And the shop owners are no different than us. I mean, we read previews, you know, all the way through. We go through it a couple of times, and there's still stuff that we miss. And, you know, the comic shop owners are no different. They're going to miss things. And you see something that excites you, tell them about it.
And with that, I think we'll call it an episode. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.